Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nyssa was an opponent of Arianism at the Council of Constantinople in 381. He wrote a book called Not Three Gods, explaining that there is one God in three persons. Each member of the Trinity is fully God with all the divine attributes, yet each member of the Trinity is a distinct person. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If when you're hungry, perhaps you could chew on this. This is Wretched Radio. Please send wretched things to 87728. No, idea. I think I'm having Radio Lexi. I'm getting my calls all confused here. Send wretched stuff to idea at wretched.org or text questions, comments, there it is, conundrum snarks to 877-282-2337. Perhaps you would like to ruminate on this headline from MSNBC. Catholic bishops sue Washington State over a law requiring clergy to report child abuse. Why should you chew on that? Because your church is vulnerable to those things. Those things can happen. It could happen in counseling. You could discover it somehow, whether it's online or with the person. Some sort of sin is going on. What sort of responsibility do we have here toward the government? Do I have to keep a confidence on this when I know that criminal activity has taken place? If you haven't thought that through, I encourage you to do so and get it written down. Have a policy for this. You're going to want to think it through. We will tackle this at least to a degree next week here on Wretched Radio. But I would encourage you, maybe ask your pastor, your elders, hey, what is our policy if we discover something like that is going on? Because how many times have we seen this? Whether it's a church, it's an institution, an organization, where things don't get dealt with well and rightly, and it causes nothing but awfulness. And for every single person involved, do you have a policy? Have you thunk it through? If not, I would encourage you to ruminate. And send stuff to idea@wretched.org.
Hey, can we go back to the question that we talked about in the last segment?
Apparently.
So I just had another spinoff of that I wanted to ask you about. Jess wrote in, just as a reminder, about a pastor in her church seems to avoid her, blocked her on Facebook, right. And she wanted to know how does she rectify the situation. It's been ignoring her and her family. So my question is, and I completely agreed with everything that you said, but my question is, to take that a step further, if she's married, she didn't say that, but should her husband not take the lead in approaching?
Yeah, we don't know about Jess, but yes. Yeah, I think so. That's it's funny because I think most guys, okay, I don't know if it's most, but I'd like to think most guys would take a punch for their wife, or they'd be willing to step in front of the bullet, that they would do the hard thing. This is a hard thing. And confronting somebody lovingly, respectfully to say, hey, looks like we have an issue here. That's big boy business. Doing it right, wisely, lovingly, respectfully, but doing it, how many people do you know who are like, oh, I love that scenario. Are you kidding me? I actually hope that something bad will happen so I can confront somebody with it. I don't know who that person is. But there's probably some sort of Discovery Channel biography on them because that's kind of nutty. Most of us are like, why don't we wait and see, dear? Maybe maybe we just don't understand and let it go. Now, that doesn't mean that might not always be appropriate. But my point is, confronting somebody, that's a man's business. And if that's your situation, if your wife brings it to you, as a rule, do not ignore it. Do not blow it off. That's when you step in and say, okay, honey, let's talk. I want to understand this totally thoroughly. I want to think about it, pray about it, and then formulate a strategy. And then you bring it back to your wife, tell her what you're thinking. And then if that means meeting with the individual who is doing what this pastor apparently is doing, then you do that. And I'm not even sure that I would bring my wife with. This is the type of stuff that I think is underneath the umbrella of the spiritual leadership in the home. This is what it means to be a protector of your family. This is what it means to be the one who steps out in front and does the hard stuff. That's on us, fellas. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I was curious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And same thing for your kids. That is why I just saw an article. These two girls, they refused to get on the podium because the dude is in first place running in the girls' track event. And I applaud them. I do, but it's like, that's not their job. They shouldn't have to be the protester, if you will. It is the men who need to speak up. It is the dads that need to say something. If that's your school going on, your daughter is being affected by it, that there's your job, Pop. There's your duty. 877-282-2337.
Okay, this is from Jordan. Todd, if someone was baptized as a believer, but that baptism was conducted by someone who has since shown themselves to be a non-Christian, is the baptism valid? Should the person seek to be baptized again?
The answer to the latter question is no, but I would ask, what do you mean valid? What do you mean valid? I don't know, but the reason I think that it's important to probe into that question is because it reveals our understanding of what baptism is. Valid? Okay, so who validates the baptism? All right, I'm going to use the language that was presented to us. Who makes the baptism valid? Is it you? Is it the person who dunked you? Is it, I don't know, God? And the answer is he is the one who validates baptism, because it has everything to do with your heart and not a ceremony. It is a testimony. And it's not something that is efficacious in any way beyond a memorial. It is not a sacrament. It's an ordinance. It is a picture of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. It is a picture of your death to sin being raised to new life in Christ. It is a picture. And that picture is painted no matter who does it. Whoever performs it, if the person turns out to be an apostate later, it just doesn't matter, because they're not the one who validates the baptism. Which, by the way, you want to have a little tishrade and a little interesting dinner conversation? Who should be baptizing people? Who should be doing that? Here's one. Does it have to be the pastor? Should it be the father? Should it be the spouse? Go ahead. You chew on that at dinner time, because that's one of the conversations that pastors will have, I guarantee you, because they get all kinds of requests. Personally, I don't think there's a law. I just don't. In fact, I just heard from a friend that he and his dad baptized their kids. Well, I think that's beautiful. Now, do I think that it speaks a better word even than that if it's the pastor of the local church? Yeah, I think it speaks a better word about the local church and one's relationship to their elders. But would I say that that was somehow biblically verboten? No, I wouldn't do that. I don't think we can make a law where there is no law. Furthermore, we don't see the Ethiopian eunuch saying, hey, I know there's water there and you could dunk me, but I need to return to Ethiopia and have my pastor do it. You don't see that. So you can't make a law where there is no law. It's sort of like burial and cremation. I don't think you can make a law about it, but I think burial speaks a better word. But you can't make a law where there is no law. Idea@wretched.org.
Okay, this is a question from Vinny. Todd, I would like to know your thoughts on making general decisions like where to work, where to go to school, who to marry, and, quote, being called towards something.
Okay, dude, those were more than general. So that was everything, basically. How do you make decisions? All right, briefly, and I suspect that we've done longer treatments on this. You could probably find it at the Fortis Plus app. It's free. I was just told, I didn't know this. Apparently, when you put plus behind a name for an app, that means there's a paywall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know that. We're not a paywall. So if you go there and search for decisions, you'll probably find something. Or the YouTube machine, if you put in wretched decisions, you'll probably find a longer treatment of this. But the first thing that I would say is that your decision-making process needs to be sorted by you and not by signs. In other words, don't be looking for that fleece. Don't be looking for that proof. Don't be looking for that sign. What is God's will for my life? I can tell you God's will for your life, that you grow in godliness, that you obey his commandments, and that you seek his wisdom in the Bible. And then you go about the business of making the best decision you can as faithfully as you can with the correct motives as best you can. So number one, pray. Don't ask God, give me a sign. Tell me the answer. No, Lord, give me the mind of your son. Give me wisdom in this decision and give me clarity because I want to make a decision that is pleasing to you. Two, read the Bible for everything it has to say about your subject. Number three, find godly people who read their Bibles on these subjects and ask them for their wisdom. Number four, consider your preferences. What do you like? What don't you like? Is this one preferable to that one? Make a decision. That's number five. And that's God's will for your life. Bada boom, bada bing. Now, the question is, do I need to do that for every decision I make? And the answer is no, you don't. But I think when you're making decisions that involve potential sin, that have big implications, that are financial decisions, not for every treat that you may be by, but how are you spending your money? Yeah, I do think that you should go about the business of following that process. Why? Because that is the path to making godly decisions. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know that moment when you're scrolling through your news feed on social media and everything just feels upside down? Yeah, that's the culture we're living in right now. But you know what gets me excited? At Fortis Institute, we're not just watching on the sidelines. We've assembled a team of incredible voices who are diving deep into God's Word every single day. I'm talking about Dr. John Krotz helping you integrate theology into real life, or Dr. Adam Tyson, who is speaking truth into young men's hearts, or Pastor Brad Bigney transforming marriages from surviving to thriving. But here's the thing, while we're standing strong, that's what Fortis means, by the way, we need gospel partners who'll stand with us. People who will look at the culture and say, you know what? The church needs more than just encouragement. It needs equipping. We're not starting something new at Fortis. We're strengthening something vital. And so if you're ready to join us in this mission, if you're ready to help us equip believers with truth that transforms, then head over to fortisinstitute.org right now to find out how to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California, beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said number six for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Truth. It's meant to travel far. It's meant to reach deep. It's meant to change lives. But for far too long, even the best biblical teaching has faced barriers, paywalls, price tags, limited access. And at Fortis Institute, well, we've been thinking differently recently. What if we could break through all of those barriers? That's why we're launching our Truth Unhindered initiative. We have extraordinary plans for the end of 2025, plans that will transform how pastors and families and seekers access life-changing teaching. But to make this vision a reality, we need you now more than ever. Right now, going on through June 30th, every dollar you give will be doubled up to $250,000. Double the impact, double the reach, double the transformation. Visit fortisinstitute.org/truth today, because when truth breaks through barriers, lives are never the same. fortisinstitute.org/truth.
Important dates in Christian history. 1735.
The Great Awakening under Jonathan Edwards stirs the American colonies with many conversions and individual returns to heartfelt faith. Because of this awakening, a number of divinity schools were founded, including Princeton, Dartmouth, and Rutgers. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Make sure you subscribe to Fortis Minus. That sounded horrible. This is Wretched Radio. Fortis Plus. It implies you got to pay to get our app stuff. Well, no, you don't. So we're not going to change it to Fortis Minus. It's still FortisPlus.org. But everything there is absolutely free. So please avail yourself of it. Go ahead and get that app installed on your whatever device, and you will see hundreds, thousands of hours of content. And as long as you're at the internet and perhaps pondering, how can they give away all that stuff for free? And the answer is our gospel partners, which is why right now we have a matching gift campaign, Truth Unhindered. This is a match campaign, dollar for dollar match, so we can close the store on the stuff we still sell. We don't sell much, but it's our big Bible study stuff, the TV series, those things that we've typically relied on for, well, you know, paying the bills. We want to give all of that away too. And so we're encouraging y'all to please consider partnering with us so that we can reach people with more stuff that they need. More churches can have more good Bible studies and resources in their church, so that we can just do more and more to just give it away, which just thrills our cold conservative hearts. You can do that at fortisinstitute.org/truth.
All right, this is from Alex. Todd, is it right for a person to leave the culture and traditions of the place he is born for a different culture where he may or may not be migrating to?
Well, let's ask the question, is it right? And the answer is, it's acceptable. Is it the ideal? Well, it depends on the circumstances, but I would say as a principle, which means this is not an ironclad rule, but I would encourage all of us to give more consideration of the place of your birth. And I'm not just talking about country. I'm talking about state and town. There is, in fact, last night, the night before, was watching HGTV, and it was a young couple from Buffalo, New York, that they moved to Florida because they wanted the weather. And this was, now they're back in Buffalo because they went to Florida, loved the weather, loved the tanning, but missed the family. And they're thinking, hey, we might want to start having children and not to have grandparents. Bingo. That is why family is so crucial. So now there's a million variables and scenarios. I'm just talking in generalities here. If you live in a town where your family is, if you live in a town where you've got a generational heritage, if you live in a place for a long time and you've got a lot of connections and you know a lot of people, be really slow to move on it's just nicer weather. It's just, but it has to be something I think pretty compelling to go, not because it's a law, but because I think it has tons of benefits for you and for your family. Don't jettison your town of origin quickly. Having said that, can you? Sure. Of course you can. You can move to another country if you want to. I'm just saying, don't treat your place of origin lightly, because it's a big deal. I remember, we came to Atlanta. We came from St. Paul, Minnesota. Wow, I've been trying to say that like I'm not from there, but I can't help it. St. Paul, Minnesota, then down to Atlanta. Now, because of a ministry work is why we came. And I got to tell you something. We felt that move. And I realized, wow, I kind of like knowing pretty much every street name in town. I like being able to know that business is owned by that family. I used to know somebody who worked there. I know that cemetery has three families that I've known. That was gone. And I miss that. You should miss that. And if not, it's maybe because you just don't realize how precious it is. So yeah, you've got permission. Just do it perhaps more slowly and thoughtfully. And send stuff to idea@wretched.org.
All right, this is a text from Anonymous. Todd, do you have any advice to give a pastor's wife that's feeling lonely within the church setting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a common malady. That's Mary Beakey wrote a book for pastors' wives. Jimmy, maybe you could go to the Amazon machine and look for it. It's Mary Beakey. It's Joel Beakey's wife. And she's writing just a pastor's wives. She would know. She's been a pastor's wife for decades. Because it is a unique position. I would always like to start with reminding us, we did not call the pastor's wife. We called the pastor. His family comes with, but she is not called. She should not be expected to do other things. She should be treated just like every church member, because she is. Now, having said that, there are some things that your pastor's wife deals with or misses out on that you maybe are not aware of. For instance, confiding in people. Let's just say she had a situation at home with her husband, and it's something she was genuinely seeking godly counsel for. Not to gossip. She needs godly counsel on this. Who's she going to talk to? She can't, because that's the pastor, and she'd be talking, and that would undermine and could make a man. What if it got out that and they'd been not? So she has to zip it and keep it all inside of herself. If you should be aware that she lives in that world. You should be aware that being just feeling comfortable and being herself, because people look at her there. To give you an idea, I think of that we have put pastors' wives into a position that I think it makes things hard in some ways. There are some denominations, man. The pastor's wife is known as the first lady. Certainly not a biblical title. It's probably more of a cultural thing. But what does it indicate? Well, there's something special about the pastor's wife. And she then feels that pressure. And maybe she doesn't ever feel like she can be weak, vulnerable, or even herself, because she has to kind of comport herself with a role that has been imposed on her by the congregation. And by the way, all of this stuff is just natural. This isn't like, oh, the church is the... It's just, it happens, and we just need to be aware of it. So if you're a pastor's wife, what I might suggest at the very least is find some folks, some ladies outside of the church in whom you can confide, maybe other pastors' wives. Find somebody not in your zip code where it couldn't pose any potential problems. And that's at least then a way to have some relationships that can be as transparent and as vulnerable as possible, because there are indeed dangers inside of a church of sharing those things, especially as the pastor's wife. Mary Beakey's book is called...
Well, I didn't find that one, but I did find a book that she contributed to, Letters to Pastors' Wives. She contributed to that book along with Donna Askell. And
Tom's wife.
Let's see, Margie Tripp.
Oh, Ted's wife.
Right.
Ted and Margie.
Yeah. Mrs. Krotz, Lynn Krotz.
This is like everybody we know.
That's right. It's Letters to Pastors' Wives, and it's on, you can get it at biblicalcounseling.com.
That's John Krotz's wife.
Right. These are really, yeah.
They're all good. Yeah, that would be something I'd encourage. And by the way, I would encourage you too, if you're not listening to John Krotz's podcast, get plugged in, because man, it's good. And even as you learn whatever it is that he's teaching, you are going to hear a gentleman. You're just going to hear the tone of a godly man who cares. Doesn't mean he's soft and wimpy and not steely strong when it comes to theology. Ah, but he's that shepherd's heart and just a gentleman. Integrated is the name of his podcast. Integrated with Dr. John Krotz, whose wife contributed letters to a book that would help pastors' wives, called Letters to a Pastor's Wife.
Letters to Pastor's
Wives.
There
you have it, 877-282-2337.
Right, this is from Kate and Todd. I shared the gospel with a family member. What do I do now? Do I share it again later or just keep praying?
Wisdom. Got to use wisdom. There's no formula here. You want to be as persistent as you can without being obnoxious. And I can't tell you how many times that is, because I don't know the dynamic of the relationship. Now, it's good that you did it once. Maybe just circle back with a follow-up. Hey, do you remember a couple of weeks ago, did you ever think about any of that stuff we talked about? There you go. So you can just be asking questions. And note this. I'm a little reticent to say this, so I might be wanting to have a take it back. But if you shared the gospel completely, the law and the gospel with somebody, I think following up is the right phrase. Do you need to, every single time you talk to them, share the law and the gospel? And I think the answer is no. I mean, great if you can. But I think once you've shared it with somebody, I don't want to say you're off the hook, but you've done your duty. You've shared with them. And you shouldn't feel guilty. Well, I need to share the law and the gospel 7 more times. Otherwise, their blood is on my... No, you exercised your faithfulness. I think you did what you're responsible to do, and that is to make the most of every opportunity. So you've done that. Now just follow up and do your best to make it real. One of the best things you can do is lose the, all right, I've got to wait for the right opportunity here, and then I'm going to spring it on him, and I'm going to be able to, and then after we order the dessert, I'm going to say the, just lose that and let it be natural, because it's going to reveal that you actually care. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.